It's Saturday morning. It's 10 o'clock. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee. And maybe he's not on. Adam, you got you now?
I am here.
Okay. As you probably have guessed by now, America's favorite soccer dad is out of town for reasons that have to do with soccer. Not so
actually,
strange.
No, that is not correct. I am in town.
In town, that's right. Out of the studio.
Yeah. We have two kids playing at different fields at the same time this morning, so someone had to take one of them to it. Just there was no way I could make it in, unfortunately. I wish I was in studio, but I could not be.
Well, as we used to say back in the 60s and 70s, it's hard to be two places at once when you're not anywhere at all. But
okay.
I digress. Anyway, all the regulars, welcome back. We're in debt to you, I guess, for keeping the show alive. And if you're new to the show, whether you've just heard about it, we tell people all the time, or if you've left your radio on and here we are, try to stick around for a while. You always learn something in the next hour, no matter what. And I say that without any reservation. I'm not telling you it's going to be the most useful thing that you ever learned, but chances are you'll learn something that will do you some good, because after all, what's more important to more people than their money? And that's what we talk about, is your money. So there's a lot of that flowing around lately. I suppose we're going to have to talk about the market again for a while, but we'll try to get over that as soon as possible. We are not in a position right now to look at the world and say, wow, we got a lot of problems and they're all being addressed. We are the first half of that. We're in a position where, yeah, we got a lot of problems. They're not all being addressed. Certain things are getting better out there. Unfortunately, some of the things that are getting better for the wrong reasons, and we'll go into that a little bit. But I guess if I had to guess, I'd say the worst might be behind us. But that is not a prediction that you should invest your money on. Adam and I are remaining very cautious at this point. And so far, it's served us well to be cautious. So that said, you want to sum up what happened this week?
I sure would. Basically, it was another Fed-induced brutal week. And it is brought to you by Jerome Powell and his minions from, well, recently of Jackson Hole, Wyoming. That's the market reacting to his speech last week, and it just continued into this week. And it's despite what you just said, that the market is showing, well, the economy is showing all signs of slowing down, and inflation is showing many signs of having peaked. And it's like they just can't see the forest for the trees. Like, it's everyone else sees it except for them for some strange reason. And if they have another indicator that they're looking at that says differently, they really should share it with us, because I am not seeing it. Everything points to inflation coming down because the market is slowing down. The economy is slowing down. I don't know how else you can read this situation.
And that's what I was saying about things are happening for the wrong reason. There are two sides to the most famous equation in economics, the supply and demand curve. And what's happening is that the poor policy has caused demand to lessen. In other words, people are cutting back because they have to. That's not the right reason. On the other hand, it's a reason. And when that happens, the results are inevitably that you're going to have a reduced level of inflation.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. It almost feels like they're living in a alternate universe right now, and I don't know if it's just posturing. I hope it's just posturing, and then the reality is better, so that way they can exceed expectations or something on the next rate hike announcement. I'm not really sure what's going on, but I don't like it.
No, clearly, and they don't seem to give any credence to the inflation indicators. Inflation is a lagging number, not a leading number. You don't know what you got until after you've had it.
Very true.
They need to anticipate a little bit on this. You know, the old rule of thumb, we got to get interest rates above the inflation rate. Well, you know, there's two ways to do that, and one of them is just wait a little bit. If the trends are going down, then let's, you know, a little pause on the other side of that might keep you from doing what they have always done in the past, blowing it.
Yeah, the projections I've seen have inflation hitting more normal levels by very early next year, which at this point is not that far off.
And that's with no further changes.
Right.
You don't have to raise the interest rate to do this.
Yeah, I don't know what they're looking at, but it's clearly not the same stuff we're looking at. So if you want to find a bright side in all of this, there is one. It's that you can finally make some money in fixed income. This week, I got an email from Amex saying that my high-yield savings account just hit 1.75%. That's about 1.75% higher than it's been since I've owned it. And I've started buying a bunch of individual bonds right now because you can get yields to maturity on short-term, high-quality debt between 3.5% and 4.5%. And a year ago, it was tough to find a quality bond with over 1% yields maturity. So right now, a three-year bond at 4%, that seems like a great deal compared to losing money in the stock market.
Yeah, and we're virtually guaranteed that at the upcoming Fed meeting, that's going to go up at least one more time. And at that point, that number could come up a little bit also.
Yeah, you may not see it hike tremendously because it's not a direct correlation, but you could see a little bit of improvement even on that. I mean, we could get up in the 5% range on certain types of debt. So it really is a nice thing to be able to have some relatively low risk yield in your portfolio, which we haven't had forever.
That's the truth.
Friday actually looked to cap off a terrible week on a good note. And there was a pretty mediocre jobs report that came out on Friday morning. It wasn't terrible, wasn't great. It was right in the middle, and they actually called it, the media, I thought it was pretty accurate, a Goldilocks report, because according to every report prior to that, that's exactly what the market was looking for. And you saw that reflected in the futures. They spiked immediately. The market opened really strong. The Dow was up about 300 points by late morning, even higher than that, I think 380 or something like that. And it really seemed like everything was going to at least be mitigated, the losses from the week. And then around lunchtime, everything turned around, and it didn't look back until the Dow ended up down over 300 points and the other indexes followed suit. Just more negativity. I'm not surprised that there isn't a lot you can hang your hat on that's positive right now. Bad jobs report isn't really what you want the market to rally on. So I really am not surprised by the result.
Okay, we'll get into the whole jobs thing after the break, and we of course have a trivia question. We'll do that, but I wanted to point something out. For the past couple of weeks, I've been telling everybody how to fix the market. The market can't seem to handle a five-day week anymore because it goes so bad on the last day of the week. So next week, I'm only doing a four-day week. And if that doesn't fix it, I don't know what will. What do you think?
Yeah, that's one.
You're cracking up a little bit. In fact, we may even be losing you. You might want to call in again during the break, and we'll reestablish the connection. All right, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And we have, as usual, a trivia question sponsored by Ken Bales at First Coast Alarm. You can call Ken at 904-636-7888. One of the items that is causing us to, I guess you'd call it being a little optimistic about the way the inflation is coming down and so on, although it might be for the wrong reasons, that notwithstanding, back in January, the number of ships lined up outside the ports in California waiting to get offloaded peaked at 109. Right now, how many are waiting? And if you saw there was a hint in there, the peak was 109. That sort of says that this number will be smaller than that. Pretty simple stuff there, right? All right. The jobs report was as Adam said, it was kind of a Goldilocks thing, and it was pretty understandable. But one thing really stood out on this one, and that is that America is finally getting off its butt and looking for a job. You see the increase in the workforce?
Yeah, it's true. It was, I think it was the second highest number on record for any month.
Yeah, 786,000 people got it back into the workforce.
That's a huge number. That's crazy.
Yeah, it took the labor participation rate up 0.3 to 62.4, which is down from pathetic to really low. Or it's up from pathetic to really low, I guess you should say. But
yeah, I guess
it's good. It's good stuff. Now go ahead.
It is, but it also, I know this is maybe a bit of a stretch, but it makes me a little bit worried that people are finally getting back in the workforce because they are, because the inflation is so high, they really need jobs. I don't know what's driving that, but the timing seems interesting, to say the least.
Doesn't it, though? And, you know, it was August. It wasn't like everybody has already gotten their kids back in school. And so I don't think it was related to that necessarily. But nonetheless, it's a good sign. But one of the ultimate surprises from this last week was when the JOLTS came out, the jobs and labor turnover, the jobs available was supposed to go down. That's one of the things you expect in a recession. It actually went up, back up over 11 million again.
Yep.
And
was a surprise. I didn't expect to see that.
And that can be considered inflationary. That's the only reason that I really give a rip about it. But it said something about this whole "are we in a recession" thing that we've been arguing that we are for a long time. And it's the strangest recession anybody's ever seen.
It really is. It's very different than historic recessions. It's really hard to know what to make of it. There's a couple of other things. The economic data definitely shows that the economy is weakening. So if you look at the different categories of data, you've got the manufacturing sector, and all but one measure has shown that that sector is weakening. That's been for 2 months in a row. For 8 months in a row, the indicators have been more negative than positive. If you look at employment, it's definitely getting weaker, but maybe not as much. But 5 of the 7 employment indicators were weaker in July. If you look at housing, 6 of the 7 indicators showed weakening in July. And pretty interestingly, consumer measures were the only positive area in July, with 5 of the 7 reports showing positive momentum. But that's not necessarily a good thing, and you might wonder why that is. It's because 2 of those are personal spending, and the other one is retail sales. And the reason that those were higher were inflation. So even though it sounds like a good thing, it's not a good thing. It means people are paying more for the same goods that they used to buy last year for a lot cheaper.
Yeah, and it does not set to me a clear path forward. But maybe that's okay. Maybe it's some uncertainty that we need. I'm not really quite sure at this point. But there'll be a lot more data coming out before the election, and I'll be curious to see which direction it tends to pull things. But anyway, the jobs report got off on Wednesday with the ADP private sector jobs. They got back in business after taking a month off. And they came in at a sort of low 132,000 new jobs for August. Then on Friday, the government things came out, and they were sort of in line with that. The headline number was 315,000. When they got to the household survey, that was up a little more at 344,000. Then I always look at the so-called birth-death adjustment, which sort of supposedly factors in businesses that start up and businesses that fail. And out of that 315,000, 309 of them were due to that. That would normally concern me. But the month before in that same adjustment was minus 344, and I figure that's just noise that got out of the system. So I'm pretty comfortable with that 300-ish number that we got. And that would be just fine if it kept going that way, because that is a lessening of the inflationary pull. But that Jolts report jolted me, I guess you'd have to say. That's the strangest one. But we also heard this week one major piece of news. Apparently, a lot of the bigwigs were kind of flummoxed by this one. But apparently, in a couple years of locking down school kids, Johnny didn't teach himself to read.
Yeah, the worst drop on record in, I can't remember what the metric is that they call it, but I did see that. It was the biggest drop in childhood learning or something like that in a long, long time.
Yeah, and math has never gone down in the history of measuring these things, and it went down.
So yeah, really sad to see. Not surprising to anyone with half a brain, but sad to see nonetheless.
Yeah, very bad. It seems to me that there should be a lesson here, and it seems to me also that somebody's taking that message, because now the educational types are blaming Republicans for keeping the schools closed. That was interesting. All right, we have a call on. I'm not sure who it is. Good morning, caller.
Hey, good morning. How are you, sir?
Good. Can I get your name, please?
My name is Ron from St. Mary's, Georgia.
I'm familiar with the voice.
Yes. You must be shorthanded. You have no one answering your phone this morning.
Yeah, he's here. It's just ringing out of the wall.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, yeah. What can we do for you?
We're just going to take a fast shot at the trivia question.
Absolutely.
And let you get back to business.
Hang on.
Yeah, I kind of lost you.
There. Okay, try again.
60.
Too high.
Oh, my.
That's good news, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Very good.
I appreciate
it. Well, you guys keep up the good work and have a happy Labor Day weekend.
Thanks so much. Same to you.
Thank you.
All right. The backlog has, well, I guess we can say from that it's sufficient to say that it's less than half of what it was. He was close enough that I'll narrow the bracket just a little bit more for you. That is definitely good news for a lot of reasons. All right, I think we've beaten up the economy and the jobs and all that by a sufficient amount right now. There's some other things we want to get at. One of them should surprise absolutely no one. Big news in the past couple of weeks. Yeah, that single-payer system that Britain has for its medical care, it's actually the oldest socialized medicine system in existence. It's not quite living up to what they thought it would. And here's a couple of samples. Only 63% of British patients are being treated within 18 weeks. The target is 92%. Accident and emergency care is only seeing 72% of the people within 4 hours. And primary care now, only 55% of British patients are getting face-to-face appointments. And before the pandemic, that was 80%. It is just flat out not working to a record 6.6 million British citizens, or 10% of the population. Now, I hope everybody kind of pays attention to that, because you know the push never goes away to get that system here, too, and it's just downright dangerous. All right, a couple of little goodies. We don't have much time before the break, so let's do a couple quickies here. Californians, you're instructed. We got to call him, but if you can hold through the break, I've only got a minute and I don't think we can get this done. Californians were informed that they're only going to be able to buy electric cars starting in 2035. So you better get on it. And then a day or so later, they were informed that you can't plug in your cars if you already have one, between 5 and 9 because their electric grid can't handle the overload. Anybody see a problem stepping up here besides me? You can't make this stuff up, folks. You just can't. California is so bad that Gavin Newsom's parents moved to Florida. Now, that one you can take to the bank. All right, we're going to have to take another break, and then we'll come back. We've got topics up the time frame, I guess. And we'll start at the top and move through it. We'll pay some bills, be right back. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Welcome back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee.
And I'm Adam Van Wee.
And I first need to make a correction. Gavin Newsom's in-laws moved to Florida. And as Byron Donalds, the congressman from down there, said this morning, we welcome them. We'll take anybody smart enough to get out of California and give them a good home, right? Works for me.
I agree.
Yep. All right, lines are open, 904-222-8255. Trivia question still out there. There were 109 ships waiting to be unloaded as of January. There are now less than half of that. How many are waiting as we speak? Now, here's another goodie. We're talking about California. We might as well keep it up. There's dumb, and there's California dumb. And I have an example of California dumb. And wouldn't you just know it involves L.A. County? Huh. Who knew?
I'm shocked.
Yeah. L.A. County has officially kicked off its UBI program. Anybody remember UBI? Universal Basic Income?
If it was tried in another California county.
Stockton.
Mm-hmm. Yep, not too long ago.
Yep, and it failed miserably. So it's kind of like socialism. Sarah and I were talking about this the other day. Or maybe it was you and me. I don't remember. The only problem with socialism is the right people haven't tried it yet. So they're going to go down the UBI thing. They're going to give 1,000 residents $1,000 a month for the next 3 years and see what happens. So let's see. They were about you had to apply for this. So they had about 180,000 applicants for 1,000 recipients. Now, keep that in mind because it becomes important. I don't know how they screened them exactly, but you have to be 18. And they have to have a household income under $56,000 for a single person or $96,000 for a family of four, which seems to me, if you're making $96,000 on a family of four, I don't think you actually should be receiving UBI. But I don't make the rules here. So they get the money by a debit card, and they can spend the whole darn thing and that's it. And whatever language you like, they'll give you your debit card in that language and so on and so forth. So here's the money quote. And who is this? Is it an L.A. supervisor? Yeah. L.A. County Supervisor Sheila Kuehl, or Kuehl, or Kuehl, K-U-E-H-L, whatever. Apologize for not knowing that part. She says, 3 years from now, I feel confident that this L.A. County program will be seen as a foundation stone that led to expanded programs providing economic opportunity and stability to every eligible American household. Oh, yeah, that's dumb, but that's not California dumb. California dumb says that because they had such great demand for this, that it's abundantly clear that a guaranteed basic income is an idea whose time has come. Let me rephrase that a little bit. People wow. like free stuff, and they want it, and that proves that we have to give it to them. Ta-da! Who knew?
Yeah, I mean, free. I'm curious who the people are that don't want free money.
Exactly. People who weren't notified, probably.
Yeah, just didn't hear about it. Oh my gosh, that's incredible.
the high demand for free stuff dictates that we give them free stuff. That, and people, is California stupid.
This probably won't be inflationary, will it?
Oh no, not at all. Oh, you can't make this stuff up. All right, another thing you've probably heard lately. Our life expectancy is shrinking again, 2 years in a row. What's going on? For years and years, with nutrition, medicine, et cetera, Americans have enjoyed an increasing life expectancy, and all of a sudden now, it's going back down. What's going on? Well, first off, now we're gonna, you might be a little bit surprised by some of this, but who knows? But first off, what did they really say? They said that between 2019 and 2020, Americans' life expectancy at birth fell by 1.8 years. Worse yet, between 20 and 21, expectancy from birth dropped again, this time by nearly one full year. So why have these trends of nutrition and medicine and everything going well for Americans, prosperity in general, why have they been reduced? Well, first off, let's go back a little bit. How successful have we been? I've got a couple of illustrations of just how successful we have been. One of them is that life insurance companies revised their expectancy charts to reflect a longer lifespan and therefore reduce the cost of insurance. Good for us, right? Another thing was that IRS picked up the torch here and took it to retirement plans, and they redid the required minimum distribution numbers, both increasing the starting date and decreasing the amount that you have to take out, again, reflective of longer lifestyles. So what do we think now? Does that mean the insurance industry and the IRS are going to revert back to the old ones? I say, no, it doesn't. And the reason goes back to what I said right in the beginning of this, that this refers to life expectancy at birth. So it apparently doesn't apply to you, doesn't apply to me, but it's at birth. So what has happened? I looked at some of the mortality things. They did too, but they didn't get them all, I don't think. One of them, well, first off, let's do a concept of mortality. There are things in your early life that could get you. A lot of those go away, and many are replaced by things in your older life that can get you. That's pretty common sense, isn't it? We know, for instance, that there's a certain amount of problems at birth, and then we know also that there's some problems when you're growing up and getting to be, say, 15, 16. And then there's a big one. If you've ever seen a chart of life expectancy problems, you will see at 16 and 17, there is a spike in deaths among that population that you just can hardly believe when you see it charted. And naturally, it has to do with learning to drive cars, maybe not learning well enough, and maybe doing dumb things. But once you get past about 20 or 21, that chart really tapers down. Between 20 and 60 or so, you are really in the sweet spot of life where there aren't that many things going on that are likely to get you. Then, of course, you get older, you get problems with various diseases and so on. So what's changed? Well, let's think about it here. COVID brought in a whole series of factors, and one of which really didn't impact young people that much. Instead, it impacted older people a lot. They were the most susceptible. But remember, one of the major mortality factors in COVID-19 was called comorbidities, which I hate the word, but it sums it up beautifully. But one of the big ones is obesity. Well, what epidemic do we have in our society that goes from the very, very young to the very, very old? Obesity. So where COVID would not be a major problem to young people, teens, and so on, if they're really overweight, and a lot of them are, it can get you. So let's put that one on the table, and let's add another one. How about gun murders? If you're in a city of any size in this country, especially if you're anywhere near the inner city, your chances of dying by gunshot wound are astronomical compared to years gone by. That is a big factor in this whole thing. Now let's add the big one. across the border is coming enough fentanyl to kill entire populations. Who's getting them? Young people, for the most part, who might tend to order, say, a recreational drug online. And a lot of that is because they're so bored from having to stay home for so long. So we are now losing about 109,000 young people every year to fentanyl. I don't have time to explain it all right now, but I'm going to look right after the break. I'm going to look at how that affects the averages and why we get these numbers and why most of us don't really have to take that as bad news for our own lives. And that will come up right after the break. Don't go anywhere. We'll pay some bills and be right back with the last segment. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour. Back to the Van Wee Financial Hour. I'm Steve Van Wee. Now, and Adam will be right back in a second. And good morning, Bob.
Hey, good morning, guys.
What's happening?
Compliments to you guys on bringing up the fixed interest during this rocky time. I've heeded your warnings and been following you guys, and I'm in most of my stuff right now. A lot of it is in fixed interest, and I'm getting about the same that Adam was talking about. It sure beats down 20%.
So. Yeah, it'll be especially good if we can get the inflation rate down and you're actually pocketing something.
Yeah, exactly. This is true.
Now, we've been complaining. If you've been listening to us for years, we've been complaining about this since we started the show 7.5 years ago. You just can't make any money on fixed income stuff.
I know. I was there when you guys were born, so on the radio.
Good.
I mean, I'm a birther, so.
Hey, I love it. An original.
Hey, wanted to take a guess at the trivia.
Yeah.
I want to set a bracket for you. I'm going to say 38.
38 is too high.
There you go.
They've made progress, haven't they?
Yeah. Have they made progress, or are there less things being shipped? That's another topic.
This is why I said, even though things are getting better, it's for a lot of the wrong reasons.
Right. Are there less things being imported, or are we just hired everybody? A huge amount of that, 64.2% of the workforce came in the West Coast, and they're longshoremen, and they're unloading boats like crazy, right?
Yep, and the word that's being bandied around a lot that I never really paid much attention to before is demand destruction, and there's a lot of that going on right now. That is the wrong reason to get things working better.
Right, yeah, demand destruction due to rising interest rates.
Yep, and a lot of other things, too, unfortunately.
So, no, that's just true.
Well, anyway, we appreciate
it. Happy Labor Day.
Thank you, too.
And we'll talk to you soon.
We appreciate it. Thanks. Good morning, Steve.
Hey, good morning.
What's happening?
I'm just listening to the show and getting a lot of good information, as usual.
Great. What can we do for you today?
Yeah, I want to take a stab at the question.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say 27.
27 is too high. Getting better, isn't it?
Yeah, be good for the next person, right? Breaking it down.
Yeah, but as I was just saying with Bob, that unfortunately a lot of these things are happening for reasons that we would rather not have. But point is, it's happening. And that ultimately will be a good thing, especially when you consider that the Christmas season is coming up, and it looks to me like there's going to be a lot less shelves that are barren if things keep up the way they're going. That would be a real plus for everybody.
Absolutely. I did have an additional quick question.
Shoot.
If I ask.
Shoot.
On the, I have an opportunity with a bank that's going to be offering like an 18-month CD,
mm-hmm.
like paying 3%. Is that something worth tying your money up for 18 months?
Depends to me. If there's no chance that you want to put that money at risk, and if there's no chance you're going to need it in 18 months, then it would be enticing. I also would say that there's probably another interest rate hike coming really, really fast. Might just dilly-dally a little bit on that and see if you can't get up just a little bit more.
Maybe a 3.25%?
Yeah, it could be something like that, yeah. I'm not sure what will happen. Most people I'm hearing now are talking about a half point raise, which doesn't translate directly into CDs, but it might go up a little. But if you want to not take that risk, I would think 18 months at 3, if it's absolutely your safe money, you just want to put it aside, why not?
Right. Plus, the good thing about this, you can add money, too, along the way.
Good.
During the 18 months.
It doesn't have a one-time adjustment in it, does it?
I have to find that out. That's a good question. I'm going to double-check with that and get more information about that.
It'd be great if it did.
They used
to use those a lot in times of rising interest rates, and I think they're very popular. But lately, you know, even something simple like a 3% fix for 18 months sounds really enticing compared to what we've had for 10 years.
Right, and one-time adjustment's a good point.
Mm-hmm. It's worth an ask.
All right,
take care. Appreciate the call. Happy
Labor Day.
All right. Back to life expectancy for a moment. Life expectancy is an average. A numerical average is calculated by summing up all, in this case, it would be all of the ages at death divided by the number of people that you summed up. And that is very, very volatile when people die young, because the difference, you know, we're dealing with numbers in the 70s when we talk about average life expectancy. So if somebody dies at 8 or 15 or something like that, they have a big impact on the average. But if somebody dies at 88, for instance, even though it's a great number, it doesn't have a really big impact on the average. So what you get in times like this when young people are dying in big numbers, what you get is a skewed number. So let's look at the kid being born today, and this is what these numbers apply. That kid is facing a 3-year shorter lifespan than we are, supposedly. Because that kid now faces, let's say, the drug, the murder, the fentanyl, all the problems that young people have, and they still have to go through learning to drive and that sort of thing. So if they get up to their, well, let's say 30, 35, 40 years old, and they're living fairly normal lives, what's going to happen there is those things are behind them now. They are not likely to die 3 years younger than we are, because they've lived through the greatest mortality risks so far. So if you're sitting there having a baby and you're worried about it, I would say avoid those things and don't worry about it. But if you're like me and already in my 70s, I'm not worried that that number is going to get me, because I lived through all that stuff. I will be subject to the normal things that older people are subject to, but that's the part that's still getting better. So you always got to understand something about the nature of statistics when they get into things that are supposedly bad news. You know, one size does not fit all in any way, shape, or form. So in case you were ever feeling bad about that, you should feel bad about it. But the things we should feel bad about are very different than what they sometimes seem, I guess. And I try to look at all this stuff through a prism that way. Adam, you back with us?
I am back.
Good.
So hopefully you can hear me.
Yeah, you're loud and clear. All right.
Yeah, we've been having some technical difficulties with the phone today.
Yeah.
Hopefully we'll get it worked out for next time I have to call in, though.
Okay. Well, our latest guess is 27 ships waiting to be unloaded. That's too high. So if you want to take a shot at it, 904-222-8255. How about back to California stupid for a minute? I'm having such a good time with this today, ever since I heard about Newsom's in-laws. How's this one? California has passed a bill sitting on Newsom's desk right now, and I don't know if he'll sign it or not, because he's got designs on the White House. But what this would do, they would have an appointed board, not an elected board, with the power to set the wages of employees of fast food restaurants wherever they want to. Right now, minimum wage in California is $15. It goes to $15.50 on January 1. These people are looking at a minimum wage for fast food right now between $22 and $23 an hour. And the limit that they would be able to go to right now would be $43 an hour. Now, what do you suppose your next Big Mac is gonna cost if this thing goes through? As I said earlier, there's dumb and there's California dumb. And this is another classic example of California dumb. It is unfortunate that we already have other states in this country who have passed laws that say, as goes California, so go we. Watch for that, people, and especially watch in Virginia, because they were one of them, and the new governor there is hell-bent on getting that repealed. There are only, as we speak, 9 ships waiting to be unloaded offshore in the California harbors. That's a great improvement. I really wish I could tell you that it's because port operations are so much more successful, things like that. I can't tell you that. What we do know for sure is demand is letting up because we're just not in good shape as a country right now. Maybe we can make it better, maybe not, but I wouldn't rush into your Christmas shopping. All right, have a good Labor Day. We'll see you next week. This is the Van Wee Financial Hour.